Images of empty seats in the stadium, disappointed fans, and struggling players appear.
Hi, I'm Sarah McLachlan. Meet the Los Angeles Angels. Once a beacon of hope, now adrift in a sea of uncertainty. The spirit that once carried them to greatness now seems trapped in the grip of adversity. And at the center of this tale stands Artie Moreno, the guardian of their destiny.
Images of Artie Moreno and headlines about ownership controversies are shown.
Artie, you hold the key to rekindling the fire that once burned bright. The fans, the heart, and soul of this team deserve a future that resonates with the echoes of past triumphs. They long for a revival, a resurgence that only your guidance can bring.
Images of fans cheering, players celebrating, and the team's historic moments are displayed.
But the passage of time has brought its challenges. Decisions that have left scars on the very essence of this storied franchise. The choices made ripple through the history, shaping the present and the dreams of those who follow.
Images of team memorabilia, historic highlights, and iconic players. My mic didn't unmute for a second there.
It's gonna be in the recording!
Take it out! It was funny!
Alright, we're pretending it didn't happen! Sarah!
For only 50 cents a day, you can help Shohei Ohtani sign with a new franchise, not the Oakland Athletics. Artie, the game beckons for redemption. The Angels, once a symbol of hope, yearn to be reignited. The fans, with hearts full of loyalty, look to you to pave the path toward a brighter future, where the halo shines once again.
Images of fans rallying, players practicing at the stadium coming to life are displayed.
Let this be a call. An awakening, a plea to rekindle the spirit, to remember the glory days.
I'm sorry, the music faded out. Oh my god!
To remember the glory days and to lead with a vision that uplifts both the team and its followers. The legacy you shape, Artie, can mend what's been broken and inspire a resurgence that will echo through generations.
Images of hopeful fans, kids wearing team jerseys, and players engaging with the community are shown.
Like Anthony Rendon flipping off that guy earlier, in the City of Angels, let the halos glow, guide your decisions. I voice cracked on Sarah McLachlan. How is that possible?
I did it twice.
And let the passion of the game breathe life into every step forward. Let us all stand together, for the Angels' revival is not just a wish, but a destiny waiting to be fulfilled.
The music swells, becoming more hopeful. I don't know if it actually does that.
It doesn't. Artie, the Angels await, their wings ready to rise again, to claim their place in history, and to remind us all, I voice cracked again, that the love for the game can conquer all.
The music fades out as the screen displays a message urging fans to support the team.
Actually, wasn't more of a fade out. I kind of actually abruptly ended it. Hang on, I'm going to try and fade it again. You want to give me that line again?
we're gonna do that again. The music fades out as the screen displays a message urging fans to support the team.
Stand with the angels and let the echoes of triumph resound once more.
Screen fades to black with the hashtag Revive the Halo. End of PSA.
Welcome to episode 73 of the Diamond Duo podcast, where we did a novel reading for the first time, and I think that deserves a round of applause for mainly myself, but also Tony Puglisi reading the stuff that's within the brackets.
Oh, I'm my frankly God. Impressed with us that we got through that. I thought 1,000% going into this, we'd both break halfway through and just say, screw it. Go straight into the episode. We'll talk about the angels, why we're talking about them for like the fifth episode straight. I'll give us credit for getting to the end. We stumbled. We both cracked our voices like prepubescent teens, but we made it to the end.
I really hope you like my Sarah McLachlan impression. I've been working on that all week for you.
Have you actually?
No, but I gave it a shot, and I think it was all right.
That's a little sad.
I did my voice the best to try and sound like Sarah McLachlan. If you want me to, I'll happily bell out In the Arms of an Angel at some point in this episode when we're talking about the angels.
Full disclosure, I offered Tom that I would do that during him reading that, because he was adamant about this. Oh, I'm going to do this Sarah McLachlan thing, which, by the way, we put through ChatGPT.
Yes.
Like we did with our, what was our, the sensual, of throw and catch, like the sensual podcast title that one outro gave us. Yeah, no. He's like, I'm going to do the Sarah McLachlan voice. And I'm coming into this not thinking I'm going to do anything. And I'm like, dude, I'll sing In the Arms of an Angel. And he's like, actually. Because he's like, oh, I'm going to do this fake radio voice for the brackets. And I'm like, oh, I could just do that. and save our listeners a little more trauma.
See, logistically, I was thinking at the time, how am I going to play the music at the same time as you're doing it? Because I'd have to time it up. And then I realized just now, I could just do that in post. But I guess I didn't think of that.
I mean, yeah, but that's like extra work for a fake Sarah McLachlan PSA. What we had worked fine. What we had worked just fine. I'm sure everybody loved it. Right, everybody? You could totally answer.
I was waiting for a response. I didn't hear anything. I think they're all in stone silence still. Stunned silence, not stone silence. I don't know what stone silence is. Stoned.
Getting stoned and listening to that. Mother God, I feel like I'd feel like I'm on another planet.
I hope somebody was transported to another planet during that intro. I would like to point out that I don't know what led us to think of this. I just remember we did the post-recording for the more Shohei news last episode, for episode 72, and then this sudden idea kicked up in my head that's like, wait a minute, let me ask ChatGPT for this Sarah McLachlan-themed intro. I think I actually asked for, write me a song about the Los Angeles Angels in the style of In the Arms of an Angel, and it gave me something. I could actually sing In the Arms of an Angel to that, but it doesn't really match up lyrically, so then I said, okay, give me a PSA instead. And it took 30 seconds to write quite possibly the greatest PSA I've ever laid eyes upon.
I would like to point out that the song ChatGPT gave us actually starts out with In the City of Angels, which lines up perfectly with In the Arms of an Angel. So, bare minimum, it got that much right. ChatGPT said, that's close enough, and then the rest of it is just a mess. I don't know. My one thing that is absolutely correct, the last line of the first verse, as the angels falter in a world so unfair. Tell me that's not written by an Angels fan. That is written by, a Twitter user who's rooted for the Angels since he was, five, watching every team from 2009 gradually disappoint him more.
Oh, my God. Well, just in case you were curious, how the chorus went for that written song about Sarah McLachlan and the Los Angeles Angels. It goes a little something like this. There it goes. Damn it, I played it too far. Hang on.
This is... Maybe the universe is trying to tell you something, man. I don't know if we should sing Sarah McLachlan again.
It's probably telling me don't do this. You're going to make a fool of yourself, but I've already gone way past that. So here we go.
Oh, Los Angeles Angels.
I'm sorry, everyone. I tried.
Your wings are tattered and torn.
I really tried. I'm sorry.
I'm not singing anymore. I'm peeking so much in my headphones that I'm peeking so much, probably.
How do you think I feel?
So in case that was gibberish, oh Los Angeles Angels, your wings are tattered and torn. Once soaring high, now you're weathered and worn. In the heart of a diamond, a story unfolds of struggles and hardships, of tales left untold. So beautiful.
Right.
Hashtag revive the halo.
I just picture the black screen just slowly fading that up, like it's an ad to quit smoking, and then it immediately goes into, like, the Burger King Whopper song.
Oh my god.
See, that's the only thing that would make this intro better. I don't know. You know what? Next time we'll ask ChatGPT to write us a Los Angeles Angels song to the theme of Whopper, 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 Whopper.
I'm already on it. I hope you know that.
Oh, God.
Actually, you know what? ChatGPT, unfortunately, I think it can only go back and reference data from, like, 2021 to the past. So I don't know if it knows the Whopper song.
Oh, no. It hasn't learned yet? Show it one broadcast of Monday Night Football. It will know the Whopper song.
Unfortunately, that's not how it works with ChatGPT. But yes, ChatGPT, thank you for helping us with that intro for episode 73 of the Diamond Duo podcast, where we actually will talk about the Los Angeles Angels. It's not only because we're doing it because we wanted to do it last episode and we couldn't. No, we actually have more Angels news that we're actually going to be kicking off with yet again. So, Angels fans, if you haven't been disappointed in us already, well, you might want to shut off the podcast now. We're recording on September 11th of 2023, and we're going to make light out of this entire episode, but of course it'll be post September 11th, obviously, during the time of this release, but since it is September 11th, we will say, never forget. We won't never forget. We don't want to make any light of that at all for the victims of the terrible, terrible tragedy that hit very, very close to us, me being in New Jersey, you being on Long Island. So it hits home, very much does. So never forget anything that's happened. Just remember the legacy of the people that have fallen and that we are stronger now.
The victims, the first responders, God rest them all. Truly a sad day in America's history, but a day of remembrance and of honor. That's all we can do is honor those we've lost. May God rest their souls. But picking up where Tom left off, like he said, recording on Monday the 11th, anything that happens after that obviously will not be covered because we're not going to be able to talk about it. It hasn't happened yet. Disclaimer number two is go follow us on social media, as always, the Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram, at Diamond Duo Pod on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter. I'm still not used to that. And yeah, I think that's just about everything we had to get through, unless, Tom, there's kind of an elephant in the room, and by the room I mean the rundown that I wrote down. I don't know. Do we want to talk about that or no?
Wait, hang on!
Oh god, what'd you do?
Okay, so I asked it to write a jingle based on Burger King's Whopper ads about the Los Angeles Angels. I'd like to point out at one point toward the end, so I'm not going to say what kind of intro I wanted for this episode. I'm going to say it only involved the term the degenerate duo, which we'll probably use at another point. It referenced it later in the song that it wrote about the Los Angeles Angels.
Oh my god. Why would it reference that? Tell me you're pasting this into Discord. I need to see this.
Wait, what song? This isn't This is not the Whopper song. Like, I knew that was going to be right.
You sound so disappointed.
This is based on Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, based on some of the lyrics.
You sound so disappointed to not hear the Burger King song.
I would like to point out, it goes, "Halo shining bright in the summer night. Legends in the making, it feels so right. With the Whopper in hand and our hearts filled with glee, we're the degenerate duo and we're cheering with glee."
I don't think that's to anything. I don't think that referenced any established piece of music.
It did not. But I just love the line, "We're the degenerate duo and we're cheering with glee."
No, honestly. I hope you know that's how I'm opening the next episode. I'm not doing the whole, like, "This episode is brought to you by," and then do a little joke. I'm just gonna say, "We're the degenerate duo and we're full of glee."
I think it's learning from the chat, because I use the same chat for the Angels PSA for the thing about the degenerate duo. It's learning based on this chat.
That's
I'm gonna
horrifying.
Have to open a new chat on ChatGPT.
That is actually terrifying.
We're the degenerate duo and we're cheering with glee. Well, we are the degenerate duo. And Tony, did you have anything else, or did we want to get into this episode?
Let's get into this. I was going to reference something in the rundown that I may or may not have written, but you know what? At this rate, we've talked about the Angels so much. Let's just get right into baseball. God knows, it's... I don't know, man. I don't know if we're ready to talk about the Angels in the absence of Whoppers or Sarah McLachlan, but I'm sure we'll find a way. That being said, though, I think we should jump into this, unless you're looking through more ChatGPT.
I'm going to keep doing it, because I want to try and see if it can actually get it, and I'm going to start a new chat so that way it doesn't put "We're the degenerate duo."
You'll understand, all you people listening out there, what that means later this episode. Don't worry, Degenerate Duo is not some weird rebrand that we're taking up. You'll understand that in due time. But speaking of due time, we've wasted up quite a lot of it on this intro. Let's get right into it. Now, we are talking about the Angels again, like Tom said, because, trust me, not because we want to, although to be fair, this content is gold. It's because we have to. This season by the Los Angeles Angels is a content creator's dream. It's literally something new every single week. And since we are recording bi-weekly these past couple episodes, we've got another new information dump for the Los Angeles Angels. This time around, do you remember how Tom and I basically said over the past few episodes the Angels should just be content that they're about to lose a generational superstar? Well, Angels fans, hope you weren't ready to have that conversation continued, because they might actually lose two. They might lose both of them. I say that because the Angels have given Mike Trout permission to explore a trade if his heart desires it. Which, let's be fair, of course his f***ing heart desires it at this rate. He would not have had a meeting with the team to discuss their future if he wasn't at least a little bit skeptical of their direction. He would not have even had this option be opened. I imagine it was Mike Trout or his agent that asked for this, and the team very likely obliged to it straight away. And there are no whispers of it happening anytime soon, but yeah. Like, Tom, I think I've run out of bad things to say for the Angels. At this point, like, what am I supposed to say? I'm sorry? Is this, like, this is a shame? This is terrible for baseball? Screw Artie Moreno? What else am I supposed to say? This is a nightmare season. I've seen bad seasons in my life. I've seen 100-loss seasons. I've seen seasons, you know, flame out early in the postseason, derailed by injury. I've seen some pretty depressing seasons, man. This might top the list of the straight-up worst seasons I've ever seen a Major League team had. And they're not even going to lose 100 games, which to me is insane. That's kind of special.
I don't know if there's a "we're sorry," like, thing. Like, I mean, we should be sorry for the fans of the Los Angeles Angels. And yeah, it is bad baseball, of course, because the game's two biggest superstars, arguably, that have developed in the league within the past 10 to 12 years, have made the playoffs once combined. Shohei wasn't even there In fact, we probably didn't even know who Shohei Ohtani was when the Angels made the playoffs the last, which I believe was either 2012 or 2013. I can't even remember the year. And honestly, it doesn't matter. Oh, 2014. Yeah, whatever. It honestly doesn't matter because they got shellacked in the postseason that year, and they've barely kissed the postseason ever since. We've gone through it week after week. Like, the moves they've made in the offseason, theoretically on paper, should pan out. I mean, minus their pitching and their development and not having a farm system, that's bad. But at least they were trying. I'll give Artie Moreno that. But, I mean, at this rate, the constant failures with Mike Trout, I mean, for Christ's sake, how long has he been in baseball now? Like 10 or 11 years? I'm not even thinking Shohei. I'm just trying to go back and focus on Trout for a second. The Angels have really never been in a winning position with him. No matter what the contract that he has with the Angels, no matter how much he's signed, no matter how much money is going to be owed, since the Angels are open to exploring a trade finally, if I'm Mike Trout, this might be my one opportunity to get the hell out of there. Because trust me, if he keeps getting hurt and his value deteriorates over the next, say, 3 to 4 years, it might be too little too late for him. The Angels could be good in 3 to 4 years, but also pigs might fly. So there's that. There's no guarantee. After those 3 to 4 years, if his value deteriorates so much because of age and injuries, he's not going to be tradable. Right now, there's at least a good amount of value for Mike Trout if a team really wanted him. They'd have to work out the specifics with the contract. I'd imagine the Angels would have to eat a good portion of that contract. I'd say at least 25% of it, if not 50% or more. But again, I'm not a financialist. I couldn't tell you exactly how that would go down or exactly if they'd even agree to that based on their current situation, which, funny enough. So we mentioned their cost-cutting waiver dumps. Over, the recording we had to do last week. They're still somehow over the luxury tax, for goodness sakes. They're barely over it, and that means it's going to tank their draft position, potentially. Like, they might go from, like, say, the 6th pick, maybe down to 16th. I think it's like a 10-spot drop automatically or something like that if you're over the luxury tax. So, they're still failing, even after cutting all those players. And we'll get into Trout more. I'll let Tony talk about that more, and then we can talk about some potential fits, possibly. But if I'm Mike Trout, like I mentioned it last week, if I'm Shohei Ohtani, I'm not signing there. And I said, if I'm Mike Trout, I'm getting the hell out of there and demanding a trade. Well, guess what? The two sides might be able to actually come to terms and just say, this hasn't worked. You're going to get value if you trade me. I'm going to get value of being in a competent franchise once I'm traded. Let's make this happen.
See, my big thing with that happening is, A, it requires the Angels to be smart, which is not a thing they're keen on doing, especially when it comes to trades. Have you seen, Tom, like you've seen over the past few years, how many times Artie Moreno has gone over his GMs to either nix a move, overrule a move, or double down on a move, like the Anthony Rendon signing, for instance? That was principally Artie. He went right over Perry Manassian's head and basically said, hey, no, we're getting this guy whatever he wants. And that's worked out so well. We'll get back to that. But I wonder if this is kind of, I don't want to say hearsay, because that would imply I think they're lying, and I don't think that's the case at all. But I wonder if this is almost like a play by the Angels, because something tells me they won't trade Mike Trout. I don't know why. I really do feel like it's the smart thing for them to do, and trust me, I could go over the reasons why I think they should trade Mike Trout, but guess what? It's the exact same reasons they should trade Shohei Ohtani, which we went over a couple episodes ago. So forgive me if I'm a bit biased, but if they didn't trade Shohei, I don't see a reason why they would trade Mike Trout now. If it's out of the if you think it's out of the kindness of their heart, you clearly don't know what organization we're talking about right here. Now, the thing with Trout's contract is, Tom, like you said, I completely agree, the Angels are going to have to eat most, if not, like, half, if not most, of that contract. And if they don't, and they want to keep themselves below the luxury tax, which Artie Moreno just loves doing, regardless of anything else in the baseball landscape, you're going to have to cough up what
whatever prospect capital you have left to even persuade a team to take on that contract. Because trust me, if you're just getting Mike Trout, the prospect of getting Mike Trout is amazing. When he's healthy, he's a game changer. He is still a prime top five player in baseball, even if he's not as great a fielder or base runner. The bat is just way too good. He could be the best DH in baseball without even breaking a sweat. The risk you're running is literally just the injuries. The guy's been in baseball 11 years, and he's got a chronic back issue. He's gonna start deteriorating at some point. Tom, I'm totally with you. If they want to do it now. I find it hard to believe they do it. Tom, you said speculate landing spots. I really don't see a team in the major leagues that could not use Mike Trout right now. Like, if I hear Mike Trout has any chance of being traded, the second the season ends, I'm calling up Perry Manassian and I'm saying, hey, how serious are you about that? I'll say, of all the teams that could really use a dynamic, like, outfield or DH bat, I'm gonna have to say the Yankees.
Of course you will.
Sue me, I want Mike Trout, and our hitting sucks. There's rumors of the Yankees getting that Japanese pitcher, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Hey, that's great. That's awesome. Still need more pitchers. And especially with some other news about another Yankees outfielder getting shut down for a little bit that we're definitely going to talk about later. Who knows? Maybe we get that. Maybe we get Trout playing in the stead of Giancarlo Stanton after a while. Stanton's contract ends before Trout's does. I'd like you folks to know I'm like half kidding here. Trust me. I feel like the Yankees getting Mike Trout would be a disaster for the team. I would love to see Mike Trout in pinstripes, but at the same time, I don't want to watch Hal eat another giant contract that'll prevent us from improving the actual sore spots for the team.
So real quickly on your Yankees thing, the only way Mike Trout will be a Yankee is when there's like 3 or 4 years left on his deal, he's old as shit, and the Yankees are like, oh my god, we see a 24-year-old star in Mike Trout. His bat's got a good swing still. We're going to take Mike Trout on. They're only going to sign him or trade for him if he's like 37 years old. So Yankees fans, don't get your hype up and don't get your hopes up. So now, any rate, now something I'm going to build on what you were saying, Tony, as to with Trout and trading him necessarily, just because the Angels are also open to trading him doesn't also necessarily mean the Angels will trade him. Like you said, the Angels are stupid. Why would they want to cash in on the value of a superstar when it's only their best player they've ever drafted and developed? Why would they ever want to do that? But even if they do look for opportunities, they might not find the price they would want for a Mike Trout. So even if all things click and they say, yeah, let's explore trade, something might not work out. So just want to point that out there. So Angels fans, you still might have Mike Trout for a long time, or maybe a short period of time, or maybe only the rest of the season. We really don't know. But as to some of the spots, you mentioned Cincinnati. I think that's bullshit, so I'm moving on. I'm dismissing it immediately. Yeah, they have the prospects and all that, but I'm not letting you keep this like Angels, Cincinnati Reds like hype train like clicky bullshit going on. No, that's not happening.
I only brought it up for the memes.
Of course you did. So the first place I would throw out there is actually Philadelphia, because he's from South Jersey. Shout out New Jersey, the greatest state ever. And he grew up a Phillies fan, so it would only make sense. And who knows, maybe Bryce Harper has to play first base long term now that he's had his injuries. Or maybe he has to DH long term and he can't play right field. Well, guess what? Mike Trout is an outfielder. So maybe the fit could work. The money, maybe not, because they've already got so much money tied up in other places. So let's keep moving down. The San Francisco Giants could be an option, maybe, because I doubt that they would trade the Angels and the Dodgers. I highly doubt that would happen, because Artie Moreno is probably butthurt enough that he's the number two team in LA and always will be. I doubt he would trade him to the Dodgers, let's be real. As of now, though, the Giants have a crap ton of cap space because they really don't have any guys signed extremely long term. So that would work in their favor. They can pretty much use an upgrade, well, anywhere, and they would have that face there. So I would see that as a possibility. I don't even want to consider the San Diego Padres. They're already an abysmal failure. We don't need them to be the Angels 2.0. I could say the Mets just for giggles, but they are building up their farm system. That wouldn't work. I'm also looking at it right now. I can't really think long term because we, again, don't really know what's going to happen. So I'm kind of just thinking in the short term.
Houston needs a center fielder.
They do. And that could work, but I don't even want to think about that. The team I will think about is the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, God.
They've been a wild card when it comes to spending their money. I mean, this is a team that once employed Pablo Sandoval for multiple years. This is a team that has signed guys willy-nilly and it hasn't always worked out. But it means they're in a major market and they're willing to spend that cash. So I think if they had the farm system to possibly work it out, I mean, they always are really good with their drafting, usually pretty good with that, and their international guys usually get a lot of traction. So I think they could possibly facilitate a trade, but I think they could be a potential contender for Mike Trout. I just want to point that out there. It's scaring me a little bit thinking about it, but honestly, I could see that potentially happening. So yeah, the teams I would say is probably Philly, San Francisco, and Boston would probably be my most quote-unquote realistic options, but we really don't even know what's realistic if we're being honest. Maybe the Chicago Cubs too. Just because, again, they don't have a lot of money in a lot of places right now. That's technically a major market, but I don't know. I'm going to go with those three. But like you said, Tony, any team would be in the market for a Mike Trout if they really wanted.
What, you're not going to put him on the White Sox? That's a major market.
Yeah, okay, but the White Sox, come on, son.
Low-key, I like the pick of the Giants. I feel like that could work really well. He'll stay on the West Coast. Like you said, they don't have a lot of money tied up anywhere, and they do need some outfield help. Their outfield's not bad by any means, but, you know, a guy like Trout in the corner outfield, which at this point in his career, if he gets traded, I find it hard to believe, unless there's a gaping hole in center, a team would shift their incumbent center fielder over for Mike Trout, given the fact that he is a little older, a little slower, and much more injury-prone. I think corner outfield suits him a little better right now, even though he's not made that transition fully yet. Boston. I love how you said, oh, I don't even want to think about Houston getting him, and then you immediately jumped to, hey, what if Boston got him? What if the Yankees' most hated rival?
Somehow they've become the lesser of the two evils, unfortunately. But go on.
It depends on the day, but as much as I hate to say it, the Red Sox would be a really good fit. Their outfield could definitely use a jolt right now. I don't know how happy the fan base is with Alex Verdugo. And I'm going to be honest, he might be a decent piece to send back if they do end up trading for him. Because you're not just going to get, you might not just get prospects for Mike Trout. You will get prospects, but you got to imagine you get some MLB talent. It's silly to debate a package right now because, again, I think you put it really well. Just because they're open to it doesn't mean it's going to happen. And to draw back to what I said earlier, the Angels did not capitalize on what would have been a generational prospect haul for Shohei Ohtani. And now his trade value is completely gone with the knowledge that he'll not pitch before surgery. So I doubt they capitalize on the same trade value as Trout. But I could almost kind of see it as like a waving of the white flag, you know, when Shohei inevitably signs somewhere else. They might just do like, all right, the old guard's gone. The money was nice. The era, like, you know, the era was fun when it wasn't horrendously disappointing. Let's ship Trout off too. This time actually get some prospects for him and just full on usher in a new era. We screwed up the farm system big time. Let's re-up it. We have some decent guys like Logan Ohapi and Reed Detmers. Let's build around them, and maybe in a couple years we'll have a good team. If the Angels are smart, they're going to do that. If you want my opinion as to whether or not they should trade Trout, absolutely. Both for Trout's sake and for the Angels' organizational structure, because at this point they're not winning with Trout. That's a fact. You cannot win with him if you're going to continue your business model like this. Plus, your farm system is completely FUBAR, which we've talked about ad nauseum at this point, ad infinitum, rather. It's another unique situation that the Angels have worked themselves into that I guarantee, given the fact that they're the Angels, they will find the dumbest, most convoluted, backwards-ass, stupid way possible out of it. And I cannot wait to laugh at them on this podcast the exact same way we have for basically a f***ing month now. That's how much of a joke this team is.
Now, we're going to move on from the Angels in a second because we've been talking about them ad nauseum, and it's almost just like I feel like I'm going to literally vomit if I keep having to talk about the Angels a little bit more on this episode. So let's leave it at this. It was picture week for the Los Angeles Angels, or picture day rather, And I guess Shohei was somehow unavailable for that. I just wanted to point this out. It's not really a big talking point. But somehow he wasn't available, and they used a generic white dude as the body double for Shohei Ohtani. They're probably going to Photoshop him in later with the 17 jersey. The guy was wearing the 17 jersey, but you could clearly tell it was not Shohei Ohtani. And we both thought that was absolutely hilarious. We just wanted to point that out.
Oh, yeah. Like, and to be fair, if this story did not break, I doubt anybody would look at the picture and be like, oh, those aren't Shohei Ohtani's arms. But the fact that it came out, and the fact that we know what the guy looks like, and Tom, you're right, it's just like, he looks like the most generic Joe Schmo you've ever seen in your entire life, and he's the stand-in for the best baseball player on the planet. That to me is hysterical. Really super duper quick, I know you want to move on from the Angels, but I just need to bring this guy up for one second, because I alluded to it earlier, and not enough people are talking about how much of a f***ing clown Anthony Rendon is being right now. We don't have to spend too long on this. We could probably spend about as much time talking about him as he does talking about his injury. The long and short of it is, Anthony Rendon has spent this year on the injured list for a f***ing bruise, mind you. I forgot about this, Tom. He wasn't on the injured list with like a sprain or a break or a tear or anything like that. I think he bruised his knee. He fouled the ball off his knee. They didn't see any breakage or anything, and he's been on the injured list ever since then. That's already a fantastic start. I get every injury is different. I don't want to just assume he's faking an injury, but I don't know, man. When you hear his responses to the media, you're gonna start asking questions. Like, for instance, when Angels beat reporter Sam Blum asked for an update, as, you know, he's one to do, you know, his job. He's doing his job, and Anthony Rendon responds, and I f***ing quote, "No habla inglés today." By the way, that's the wrong tense. He would have said, "Yo hablo, no hablo inglés today." Number two, that's just straight up rude to say to the guy who's doing his job. And number three, this is not the first time it's happened. He's been asked, like, oh, how's the knee? And he's like, oh, well, I've got two of them. And then he walks away. He's been doing this all season long. Like, this is not too much of a new development, because if memory serves, he would give, like, these, like, half-joking answers back in Washington when he was with the Nats. But, you know, back then, there was, like, no pressure on him. He was, you know, he was, like, an under-the-radar player to a, like, budding superstar. Like, I think in 2019, he had a really funny exchange talking about, like, oh, how do you think you guys can get some more hits on the board? Then he grabs his bat, and he goes, well, you see, we have these bats, and when we use them, we hit the ball. Like, that was funny. You know, some lighthearted humor. It's always welcome. But when you're just actively being a passive-aggressive, well, actively being passive-aggressive, but yeah, when you're being a passive-aggressive and not giving the media, not giving them anything about your injury, whether you're partaking in baseball activities when you're coming back, it gives a sense that you're content with just making millions of dollars sitting on your ass, which I'm just gonna go out and say Anthony Rendon's absolutely doing. Just absolute clown behavior from him.
See, I work in the media, and I'd get that too. I'd be pissed. But at the same time, you've also got to realize, if he's asking this, if this specific reporter, Sam Blum, or the other media members are asking him this, like, an update, like, once a week or something like that, at some point, if nothing changes, what are you really gonna say? Like, to be fair, I'm playing devil's advocate here. Like, I'm okay That's with fair. The half-assed answer, because it's a half-assed environment anyway, so screw it. I mean, like, you talk about no pressure in Washington, there's pressure now. Well, there's no pressure now. He's on the Los Angeles Angels, if anything. The only reason they're in the national spotlight is not because of Anthony Rendon or anything he's ever done. It's because they've got Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. If without them, they would not be talked about at all. They'd be like the Royals of baseball. They can be unspeakably bad, but they will get no coverage or no talk about whatsoever. And even though they are bad, not a lot of people will point them out for being so bad. Or, let me put it this way, it won't be Oakland bad, because there's always somebody worse than you. And that would be the case if Trout and Ohtani weren't on this team. But, at the same point, yeah, I probably wouldn't be using those answers, given the team's record, his track record, his incidents, and all that stuff. It's not really adding up. If that's really his thing, and they do have a good relationship, if he does have a good relationship though with the media and all that stuff, it's just a funny incident in my mind. But I don't think it's honestly at that point, to be honest, given, again, how things have gone with the Angels. But enough Angel fodder. Let's go to another zip code. Actually, it's probably the same zip code. Actually, I really don't know if where the Angels play and the Dodgers play are two different zip codes. I don't know the geography of Los Angeles very well, but we will be sticking in LA for this next story, and it's kind of a glum one, because Julio Urias has been arrested and placed on paid leave for domestic violence, which it's the second time he's been convicted, and to make things even worse, well, actually, everything is very bad, I'm going to point out. I'm not going to say to make things even worse, that just makes it sound like the first time wasn't bad enough. No, he was suspended, I think, 25 games for that incident already, but we've kind of moved on and looked past it. Well, now we're not going to be doing so much, because this time he did it in a public environment. I believe it was an LAFC game or something like that when Messi was in LA. Like, a bunch of celebrities were there, and this was after the match. And I guess it was in the parking lot or something like that. There was a domestic violence incident, I'm assuming with a girlfriend. He's been arrested. He's on paid leave. And guess what? He ain't coming back this year, Dodger fans. Or really, anybody. I don't know why I'm speaking to Dodger fans. Dodger fans hate his guts. It's LA. But more on the baseball spectrum, he's a free agent this year. So it's going to be interesting to see what his market is going to be, given how this plays out. Again, it's still an ongoing investigation, I believe. But I'd also like to point out, the Dodgers have kind of disassociated themselves with Julio Urias. I believe there have been murals around LA and stuff like that, I thought I saw. They've been painted over not to include him. So that goes to tell you kind of where things are with Julio Urias right now, as again, he was placed on paid leave for a domestic violence incident, his second incident, and now it's an indefinite suspension. Well, it's definitely going to be a suspension from baseball. Right now, it's an indefinite leave from baseball.
Can I just start my little segment with the irony that, I don't know if this is irony or not, I don't think it is, but I love the status of this where it's like, hey man, you hit your girlfriend or your wife again, it's your second offense in 4 years, and you were convicted and arrested for it? Have a paid vacation, man. You know, you've earned it. Have some money. Just go, be away from the team. You deserve it. I know that's basic protocol, but I don't know, paying a guy who just got arrested for hitting a woman, that just, I don't know how well that sits with me. But nevertheless, it's a mess. It's a goddamn mess. That's what this situation is. And Tom, it's way more than just the murals. They had a Julio Urias bobblehead night that they had ironically planned for this late in the season. Yeah, that got axed pretty damn quickly. I don't know what promotion they're running instead. I wasn't able to dig that up, but that's not going to be a Julio Urias night anymore. He's definitely not coming back to the Dodgers in free agency. No shot. They hate his guts. You saw how they reacted when the whole Trevor Bauer incident went down. I find it really interesting to ponder if there's going to be a team that'll bite on him. It's kind of hard to tell because we don't know what a potential suspension would look like, and at this point, there's going to be a suspension. Like you said, Tom, it's his second offense. He was suspended for it the first time. This one's probably going to be a lengthier one. So I don't know how it's going to go down. I don't know who could potentially be in the market for his services anymore if they're willing to take on what is going to be probably a PR nightmare. And yeah, he's definitely not coming back rest of the year, so, and neither is Walker Buehler, so Dodger fans, in case you wanted pitching, f*** you, you can't have any. Good luck in the playoffs.
Well, I can tell you a team that might be wanting him, it's the Yokohama Bayhawks, which is the team that I believe currently employs Trevor Bauer out in Japan. So, Julio, go learn Japanese, buddy. That's where you might have to end up pitching next season, if you pitch at all, God forbid, like he actually doesn't go to prison for this, being that it is a repeat offense. Not good, but regardless to say, he ain't going to be in LA. It's certainly not going to be with the Dodgers. The Angels aren't definitely going to bite, so 28 teams up, 28 teams are probably going to pass. I'm not going to lie. If it's their second time being suspended for this, I think baseball's kind of taken that stance to where it's like, yeah, the first time, if there's like disputable evidence or something like that, yeah, maybe we can look past it if you do an apology and whatnot. The second time, yeah, dude, like, no. That very well could be the case for Julio Urias.
I mean, we saw that first scenario play with Marcell Ozuna. Went through something very similar, if not the exact same thing, and he was given a second chance because, guess what? He wasn't an idiot the second time. Well, he was an idiot and drove drunk, but But he didn't put his hands on her again. That's the important part. So the Braves were willing to take that flyer on him. Julio, as much as I want to joke and say, like, oh, this has an Artie Moreno signing written all over it, I don't even think he's that stupid. I would not be surprised if he's done either. We'll see how it goes, though. Hard to speculate. It's kind of like the Wander Franco situation from a couple weeks ago, which, shout out to Tom and myself.
Oh, God.
Who drafted both Julio Urias and Wander Franco, respectively. Or yeah. Not respectively. I drafted Julio, Tom drafted Wander. So that is where the what do we call it? The degenerate duo? That's where that comes from.
Yes, you wrote down the delinquent duo on the rundown. AI generated the degenerate duo from my helping, I guess you could say. Either way, it's not... It's not a good pair, let's just put it that way. I mean, me and Tony, yeah, we could be the delinquent duo. We're two idiots. The other two, though, yeah, they might be in prison league together. So we'll leave it at that for now. So we're going to kind of talk about this series that took place over the weekend for a little bit, obviously, because we've got plenty to talk about, obviously. And it's between the Brewers and the Yankees, two noted, hated, bitter rivals. They did have a kind of an interesting Sunday, though, being that there was a no-hit bid that went through the ninth inning, if not the tenth inning, too, if I'm not mistaken. That was broken up by the Yankees at some point, obviously, because they won. And, of course, that exact same day, I'm kind of just glossing over the stories. I'll let Tony talk about them more in detail because he wrote this out actually in pretty good detail, so good for you for doing that. The Jason Dominguez injury, which is not good news for the New York Yankees, or really for baseball in general, because the kid was doing so great within the week that he was up here. He was already setting records and whatnot, looking like that young phenom, and then, bam, injury. And it's not a very good one. Tony, I'll let you recap the weekend of Brewers-Yankees.
So, everyone, take a great big trip with me back one whole day. Although when you're listening to this, it's going to be a couple days. So it's week one of the NFL season. You're probably not watching baseball. Or if you're listening to this podcast, maybe you are watching baseball. Good for you. Baseball's a better sport anyway. Don't at me. Brewers-Yankees is lined up for a nice little afternoon game. It gets pushed back a tad due to rain, but it still starts mostly on time. And it's a goddamn pitcher's duel. Gerrit Cole versus Corbin Burnes. You gotta figure, wow, not a lot of runs are gonna be scored in this game. And hey, guess what? You'd be right. Just turns out that not a ton of hits were connected for either. The Brewers got a handful of them sprinkled throughout the game. I don't think Cole really bent to give up much, if anything. He gave, three hits to nine strikeouts. That, I think, is goddamn cherry on top of what's going to be a Cy Young season that we're going to waste. Aw, yeah. But either way, Corbin Burnes, credit to him. As much as I'm going to shit on the Yankees and the Brewers hitters, Corbin Burnes and Devin Williams deserve a lot of praise. They no-hit the Yankees through nine innings, which, in case you guys forgot, Corbin Burnes actually did this with another Brewers closer a couple years back. He did that with Josh Hader when they combined to no-hit, I think, the Phillies. I forgot to look this up. Tom, it was in that one year when we had like seven no-hitters back in like 2021. I forget who they no-hit, but I know they did have that combined no-hitter. Corbin went eight and then Hader got the last three outs. It would have been that exact same scenario, but instead it would have been Devin Williams getting the last three outs. But the Brewers forgot a pretty important part of baseball. To win baseball games, you need to score your own runs, not just prevent your opponent from scoring them. So a 0-0 tie was the state of the Yankees going into the 10th inning, and they probably got no hit for another inning. Thank you. Thank you for that. Much appreciated. Definitely needed that further scar to my psyche. By the way, credit, before I throw it to you super quick, credit to Abner Uribe, who is the pitcher I've never heard of who continued the no-hit bid. Good for you.
I found out when that no-hitter was.
Oh, God.
2 years ago to this date, 9/11/2021, Corbin Burnes and Josh Hader combined no-hitter against the Cleveland Guardians. 3-0 victory. 2 years ago to the date that we are recording. How about that?
That's actually pretty sick, not gonna lie. And the no-hitter was thrown yesterday, or the no-hitter, in quotes. That's actually pretty sick. I did not think it would line up that perfectly. God damn it. But nevertheless, we're scoreless through 10. The Yankees are without a hit through 10. And the 11th, they finally break through. I think it was Tyrone Taylor got them on the board. But then the Yankees break it up in their own way. They break up the no-hitter and the shutout in the 10th. And they trade runs for a couple innings there. By then, the dam's busted open. I think Stanton homered in the 12th to tie the game back up. And then noted member of the three home runs in one day club, Kyle Higashioka, sent everybody home happy and relegated the Brewers to the disgustingly humiliating tag of threw a no-hitter and still lost. See also the Cincinnati Reds against the Pittsburgh Pirates like a year ago, however long ago that was. I know Hunter Green did it, so I think it was last year. So yeah, happy ending, right? Happy ending for the Yankees. They actually squeaked one out against a first place team that utterly dominated them the night before. That would be the case if minutes, I shit you not, minutes after the game, we were getting tweet notifications from Brian Hoke and everybody around the Yankees that promising young outfielder Jason Dominguez, one of the top prospects in baseball, just tore his goddamn UCL, necessitating Tommy John surgery and an absence from any and all baseball activities until bare minimum the end of next year, like middle to the end of next season. Frankly, if I'm the Yankees, I don't care how well they're doing next year. This is a potential face of the franchise. You are exercising as much caution with him as you can afford. Do not f***ing ruin him. I swear to God, I will find someone. Don't take that too seriously. It's a silly podcast after all. But nevertheless, I say don't ruin him. But here's the thing, Tom. It was reported that he felt something in the Houston series, and what did they do? They elected to keep playing him. This marks now, what, the fifth time someone's been forced to play hurt for the Yankees so far this year? Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu, I'm pretty sure Rodon did it at one point. I'd be surprised with how terrible he's been. Jason Dominguez, it's five. I really don't know who needs to hear this in the Yankees staff, but fire your medical team. Fire whoever's job it is to make medical decisions for this team. I don't know what's happening. At this rate, someone's going to get sued, or someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get seriously hurt for the rest of their life, and it's going to be the Yankees' fault. Why do they keep playing guys who are injured, especially someone as young as Dominguez? God, man, I get if it's, you know, oh, I'm feeling a little sore in my elbow. Oh, are you good to go? Yeah, I'm good to go. Why is your next response not, okay, yeah, you could play today, but we're going to do some imaging. We're going to, just in an abundance of caution, we're going to play it safe. I don't get it, man. That was the whirlwind of a Saturday. I'm going to cut myself off there from going on another Yankees rant because you all know I have the power to do that and endless reason to do that. But that is the Yankees and the Brewers. No good, very bad week one Sunday. Maybe their fantasy teams turned out better in football.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and speculate that the Yankees forced him to play hurt or anything like that. I think it's more along the lines of what you were saying. It's like maybe he was like, oh yeah, my elbow hurts, but it's something he could obviously play through. It could just be a little tickle for all we know. It could just be a very small amount of pain. And then obviously when it was unbearable, he said, guys, we should get this checked out. Like, it hurts too much. So we don't know when he tore his UCL, to be fair. He could have torn it earlier that morning, like, God forbid, during BP or something like that, if he even took BP. I really don't know. And he could have done it then. It's possible he could have aggravated it then. He could have been playing with the torn UCL. We really don't know. It's just kind of speculation at this point. But like you said, Tony, if it's something I think I could play through, I'm not going to sit out. That's not what an athlete wants to do. An athlete wants to be on the field, earn his stripes, especially if you're Jason Dominguez, where the Yankees have devoted...
Unless you're George Kirby.
Unless you're George Kirby. Yeah, that's a whole different story that we didn't even write on the rundown. But or Tony may have. I honestly didn't look. No,
I actually didn't. I just remembered it now.
Yeah, that's a whole debate that we could have, maybe, but we'll find out, I guess, later on in the episode. Yeah, it could have been, again, something you could have played through, because the athlete, again, wants to be there. If you're Jason Dominguez, you're the star potential of the franchise. They brought him up in September to give some fans the excitement that he can bring, just some excitement, something to latch onto for this team. Hal ordered the move. He wants to see me play. So the pressure could have been on him to say, you know what, I just really want to play and see this through. But you never know. They could have proceeded with caution. We really don't know what happened. It could have been, again, just a small numbing pain, and then it turned into something a lot more radiant and noticeable. We're not really sure. So that's that. Brewers, congratulations on your almost two... Actually, technically, we could say congrats on your two no-hitters damn near 2 years apart, but obviously you have to finish out a game to get the no-hitter, so that didn't happen, so sucks to suck. Sal Frelick, nice catch. And what else do I have to say about Jason Dominguez or the Yankees? I'm trying to think. I thought I had something else I wanted to add, but I really don't remember. Maybe my brain is just too scattered. I'm sorry. I'm dealing with an Aaron Rodgers potential injury at the exact same time that Jason Dominguez is getting hurt, too. So it's like a terrible weekend for New Yorkers. And then the thing Tony wanted to mention, I'll mention it here. The Giants get absolutely obliterated 40-0. Yeah, I saw that in person. It was ugly. I'm not talking about that anymore. It was that bad. It's just a bad weekend for New York. Potentially, if Aaron Rodgers, God forbid, it comes out that his Achilles is torn. That's really, really bad. If it just is an ankle thing, then that's a lot more bearable, but it's just a terrible weekend for New York and injuries.
Hate to be the one to say it. I don't know if you saw.
Oh, I saw it. They fear it's an Achilles.
I was going to say the head coach just said that. I don't know if you saw it, but...
Yeah, I did see that. I didn't want to say it because they are doing an MRI to confirm, and it honestly doesn't matter because this is a baseball podcast. I just wanted to make the point that, yeah, this is a terrible, terrible weekend. And
for New York.
Oh yeah,
sports.
Apparently Schefter did say that he did tell reporters that he believed it was a torn, or no, he just said Achilles injury. I don't want to speculate. And Zach Wilson will be the star the rest of the season. Oh dear God in heaven. Yeah, it's just a bad week in New York sports. Please continue. I have nothing else to add to this.
Yeah, if we keep going, we're just going to start droning, just like every New York sports fan could do after this weekend. Trust me, it's been fun.
Droning? How about drinking? Fun. I want to take that up.
Oh, you know what? Yeah. Dime a duo after drunk.
Yeah, that's when really the degenerate duo.
Perfect. We'll do that for episode 100.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, let's get the show on the road because we just got one more section for y'all. And it is September. We have spent startlingly little time these past couple episodes talking about the postseason race, postseason implications, like how's everybody doing? Mm-hmm. Who's hot, who's not, who is out of the playoff race, who is ridiculously overperforming still? We haven't done that in a while. So figure just throw this little segment in and talk about that because contrary to, if you're just paying attention to the AL Central or the NL West or the NL East, there's still some damn good divisions out there. There's still some damn competitive divisions, I should say. And some pretty close wildcard races, like the National League in particular. I had no idea how close it was until I looked it up earlier today. So we're going to go through some of the key division races first. And Tom, I think it's only fair that we start with probably the most contentious one of them all. And that's the AL West. This was a division that even a month ago looked open and shut for a team that neither of us expected to be in that position in the beginning of the year. Texas Rangers were running the table. It has been that way since April, and they had really showed no signs of slowing down. Their offense could stand with any in the league. Their pitching staff, even though it was hampered a bit by injury, DeGrom out long-term, Eovaldi about a month, they still had guys stepping up, they still had guys playing big roles, and even the bullpen hadn't imploded, which for the Rangers is a very good sign. Then August happened, and all that went complete opposite. Just, you remember how I said the bullpen was pretty good? The bullpen sucks now. The starting rotation was relatively clutch, despite being very injury-prone. Now they're both injury-prone and unclutch. And the starting lineup is starting to see its holes, too. It's still got its everyday contributors, your Semiens, your Seegers. I would say your Garcias, but he actually just landed on the 10-day IL.
Oh,
so
God.
The Rangers have fallen off quite a bit, Tom. They're actually in third place right now, and at the time of recording... Oh, actually, wait, no, this might have actually changed, because they just trounced the Blue Jays. Yeah, that did change. They were out of the playoff picture when I wrote this rundown, but now they're technically back in, tied with the Mariners, who are currently tied in a game with the Angels. I don't know how you do that when you're in the middle of a playoff race, but yeah, man, the Rangers have fallen off quite a bit, and it's because of a lot of things, but chiefly that pitching.
Yeah, it's not good. And this is the main question that we had about the Rangers, I think, going into the offseason. We said, yeah, they could probably use some more outfield depth and some more bats, but it was all going to come down to the pitching. And it honestly looked pretty solid in the beginning of the year, but they just have not been the same team in the second half, mainly the month of August, but it's just been absolutely god-awful. And I don't want to say Aroldis Chapman is the reason why, but all I'm going to say is they were a better team without Aroldis Chapman, and now all of a sudden, his smiling has cost the Rangers some victories. Maybe I could say the same thing about Max Scherzer, because he was losing terribly on the Mets this year, and now guess what? The Rangers are losing games with Max Scherzer. So maybe it's just a curse of Max Scherzer. Maybe it's the curse of Aroldis Chapman. Maybe it's a curse of both of them. If you want their numbers, though, Scherzer 3-2 with 7 games pitched with the Rangers, 3.63 ERA plus of 1.22, so it's probably not that. Aroldis Chapman 1-2 record, 3.04 ERA, 3 saves. I think he's probably blown more than he's actually converted at this rate, and a 1.47 ERA plus. Needless to say, the Rangers could definitely use some work in their bullpen. I think that's really what's been killing them for the most part, if I'm not mistaken, but that just seems to be the way things are going for them in the second half. So that's bad for them. As for the rest of the AL West I'll talk about, the Mariners were a second-half team last year, so it honestly doesn't surprise me too much that they are a second-half team this year. I'll try and give you a win-loss of the first half compared to the second half, although I don't think I really need to because you're just showing me a picture that says they're 36-14 during a stretch of games. That's all you really need to know. They've been playing red-hot since the beginning of August, and good for them. They deserve it. Their fans absolutely deserve it. Houston, they're just still kind of there. They're still clawing away, trying to win the AL West crown. Actually, they've got the lead right now, which I constantly forget about. They're 82-63. Seattle 79-64. Texas is also 79-64 at the time of the recording. Houston, again, most likely, I would say, probably to win the division unless Seattle continues playing hot. Even then, I'd still put my money on Houston just because they're the more experienced team in this department. So, yeah, Rangers pitching sputtering, and that's not really good, considering the Blue Jays, like you mentioned, have kind of overtaken that spot. They got that half-game lead now on Seattle and Texas. They've been 7-3 in their last 10. They're clearly red-hot as well. So that's going good for them. With the Yankees are kind of spiraling, the Red Sox are kind of hanging in there. They're 6 games back of Seattle and Texas, but I think at this rate, this far into September, I really don't think the Red Sox have much of a chance. So I think it's ultimately going to come down to who's that last wild card, which I can see later on in the rundown. We're going to be talking about that again, so I'll leave my thoughts for that. For the AL West, Rangers, it's not looking good. They're going to need to start really pitching a lot better soon in the bullpen if they have any shot of making the postseason.
That's really what it's going to come down to. And I think you pinpointed it perfectly with Aroldis Chapman. He's not the sole cause of their problems, but it's kind of curious that things got worse when he showed up. I don't know. It's kind of hard to make heads or tails of this division right now because of how close they all are. I mean, the Mariners and Rangers are both 2 games back of Houston. That could change at a moment's notice. I'm pretty sure the Mariners and Astros play again. Yeah, they do. In the last week of the season, the Mariners play a home series of 3 games against the Astros. And they're going to need to win that because guess what? The Astros play the Royals twice in the set before that.
I believe you're saying the Astros in Seattle play last. It's actually Texas in Seattle, the Rangers in Seattle, that play last.
I'm not saying last. I'm saying they have a series there. Wait, no, they have Mariners in Seattle have a... Mariners in Seattle, Jesus Christ, why can't I speak? The Mariners and the Astros have a series from the 25th through the 27th.
Gotcha. I would also like to point out the Texas in Seattle... They play each other 2 more series throughout the season, September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, then again the 28th, 29th, 30th, and October 1st. First series is in Texas, the last one's in Seattle, and that closes out the season.
Those are going to have insane playoff implications. At the end of the day, it's kind of hard to just pick a winner and be so confident in it, so I'm just going to say the Mariners because I like them the best, and frankly, I think they have the fewest question marks, let's say that. Like, all their injured guys have been coming back recently. Jared Kelnick actually just came off the injured list today. Their bullpen kinda worries me, sorta kinda. With the Astros, as great as they've been, I still really worry about their starting rotation. We haven't talked about it a whole ton, but Christian Javier has struggled big time. Hunter Brown has come back to earth in a big way. The only starter I'd really trust there to go big innings is Framber Valdez and maybe JP France, but he's got a problem with walks. So, I don't know. Houston's starting rotation does not nearly have the teeth it once had. Oh, and they also have this guy named Justin Verlander now that they got at the trade deadline. I don't know. He might be all right. Maybe. I'm not sure. Jury's still out. But no, that's a quick look at the AL West. We're definitely going to come back and talk to them, talk about them again when it comes to the AL Wild Card. Super quick before I move to the next division, congrats to the Kansas City Royals, who are the first team to lose 100 games. Nope, it was not the A's. It was the Pasquantino-less Royals. Congrats, guys. That's really, really, really sad. The A's are trying to lose. Either way, let's stay in the AL and talk about the AL East, because this is a two-man race, and it could really change at a moment's notice at this point. At the time of this recording, it's Baltimore at the top of the standings, with Tampa Bay 3 games behind. Now, it's basically set in stone. Both of these teams are making the playoffs. Whoever doesn't get the division gets the top wildcard spot. Tampa Bay is up 9 games for that first spot. Even if Baltimore falters and has to settle for a wild card, they're gonna be the first one. So both teams are the envy of the American League. They should both be insanely proud of the seasons they've had so far. Now it's just about bringing it home. And I'm just looking at Baltimore's schedule right now. Outside of, they actually have a tough stretch. They're playing the Cardinals now, which is good for them. But they immediately have to turn around and play Tampa Bay and Houston, which, that 4-game set against Tampa Bay, that's going to be important. But then they get Cleveland, Washington, and Boston to close out the season. So if they need to tie up any loose ends, they can do it on 3 teams that don't have the greatest pitching right now. Frankly, I want to be bold at this point and say they keep it. They're up 3 games now, and even though Tampa's riding a nice 4-game win streak, they got the 4th one tonight. I just like what Baltimore's running right now. All the guys I figured would cool down at this point have not done so. They're getting guys from injury back too, like Cedric Mullins, like Jack Flaherty, I think, missed a start. He's back now. The only guy they're really still missing is Felix Bautista. You have him, and I think they can make a serious run in the postseason. Although Yennier Cano has done a decent job at filling the closer role, Baltimore is still, I think, the better team on the whole. Tampa Bay has shown that they're mortal over the second half, really.
Yeah, Tampa Bay might be red hot right now, but the Orioles are also just as hot. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. Again, I don't know if they're taking tonight into consideration on MLB.com. I think they are.
They are.
I guess the standings updated. Yeah, okay, yeah, so that's updated. So yeah, they're 91-52, Tampa Bay's 89-56. There's a 3-game gap in the AL East, like you mentioned. And honestly, now who did you say had the easier schedule going down the half? Was that Tampa?
The schedule I read out was Baltimore's. I did not look into Tampa's.
Oh, okay. I'll look up Tampa's schedule, but I think that schedule that you were mentioning for Baltimore, that'll work out in their favor. That doesn't sound like that bad of a schedule, to completely be honest with you. Now I'm going to look up the Rays' schedule, and I'm going to see who they've got down the stretch as well. It's pretty much a guarantee them and the Orioles will be in the postseason. It's just a matter of which one's going to be probably the 4 seed and which one is going to be atop the American League. So to end the year, you've got Minnesota and then Baltimore, the Angels, Toronto, Boston, and Toronto. That's the Rays schedule. So you've got a division winner right now. I'm going to put asterisks around division winner because it's the AL Central in Minnesota. You've got Baltimore for a 4-game set, which will be extremely crucial because, God forbid, these two teams go down to the wire, or like Baltimore falters in their next series and then the Rays start beating Baltimore, they're going to be knotted up. And then you've got the Angels, Toronto, Boston, and Toronto. The Angels, they should easily win that series. Toronto, they've got 6 games against, and Boston is just 2 games. So my money, again, I'm going to probably put on Baltimore. God forbid there isn't another injury. I just think Baltimore, for whatever reason, will have that dumb luck a little bit easier. Will they go far in the playoffs? We're going to have to see and take a look at their roster later on. I will say they'll have that bye, so it might help them out. Although, I will say, if Tampa is the 4, They're going to be on a crash course for a ALDS matchup, quite potentially, because the 4-5 winner would take on the 1 winner in Baltimore if things shape out correct as they are right now. So that would be extremely interesting. Toronto's creeping up, but they really don't have a shot for the division right, really. So they, if anything, they're fighting for that final wildcard spot. So just stay tuned if you're Toronto for that. And then finally, the NL Central is starting to set as well. The Brewers have the top spot for now, but surprisingly, there's another contender right behind them. It is 3.5 games back, and then the next person after that is 7 games back. The Milwaukee Brewers are first, they're 80-63, and oh, would you look at that? Who projected the Cubs to come in second earlier on this year? That would be one Tom Bauer! How about that? Hallelujah, they'll meet the over-under that you set out for them. I feel pretty proud of that pick. They're 3.5 back of Milwaukee, and Cincinnati is 7 games back of Milwaukee. They're 74-71. What the most surprising part of all of this is, though, is that the Cubs and the Reds are somehow in the wild card hunt this late into the season because the National League is so aborted this year. Because teams that were supposed to be relevant, the Cardinals, the Mets, and the Padres, have all shit themselves this year, and they're all at least 10 games back of 500. Who would have believed that? I mean, for Christ's sake, I'm looking at the expected win-loss record of the San Diego Padres. Their expected win-loss is 78-66, and yet they're 67-77. And again, that's based on the run differential, which is plus 61, which is by far the best of any of the National League's teams that are not in the playoff hunt currently. They're 8.5 back of the wild card, so it surely ain't going to be them this year. But yeah, they've all faltered. So now the wild card shapes up to be Philly, Chicago, and Arizona at this moment, with Miami, San Francisco, and Cincinnati right behind them, all within a game and a half to 2 games of each other. Chicago holds the 5 seed right now. They're up by 1.5 games of the Diamondbacks, who the Diamondbacks are a game and a half up on Miami, and then San Fran and Cincy are half game back of Miami at the moment. So the NL Central, this should be the Brewers to lose. The Chicago Cubs, though, oh, they're only 5-5 in their last 10. I thought they were doing that. They had a big win streak, I thought, in the month of August, Tony, or maybe in the September, the Cubs did. I think they had like 8 or 9 right? wins they rattled off in a row. Yeah, they've cooled off then, because if they're 5-5 in their past 10, that's not good. They should still hold on to a spot based on the level of talent that's left on these rosters. It should be the Cubs. Cody Bellinger can do some great things, get some MVP votes out in Chicago, and he should be there, but this is the Brewers division to lose, and quite frankly, they're going to be the division winner at the end of the year. Let's be honest with ourselves.
I mean, yeah, if you want to play it safe, definitely the Brewers are the team to remain up there, especially Tom. I want to give a special shout out to somebody who's going to help the Brewers go to the World Series. I don't mean that lightly. I mean, like, they have found their guy, and they called him up today.
Oh, shut they up. Have oh, my God. You're going to say Josh Donaldson, you f***hack.
No. Why would I say that? No, I see. I thought Josh Donaldson was in Japan, where he probably should be. See, I was gonna say it was gonna be the greatest hitter of all time. And that's obviously Andrew Monastario. He's gonna lead the Brewers to a title. Let me tell you what.
Who?
What? You didn't watch any of the games this weekend when they played the Yankees?
No.
Probably smart. No, he was like, he's their third baseman, which frankly, the fact that he's their third baseman makes it a little more understandable why they'd call Donaldson up, but, you know, I think he actually did well today. They'd carve through the Marlins, which, that was a key win for their division rivals, actually, because that pushed Miami back a good game in that wild card race. Like you said, they're a game and a half back of Arizona. They are only a half game up on the Giants, who are currently tied with Cleveland right now in the bottom of the eighth. They could very easily turn it around and make this little spiel obsolete minutes after we have it. But no, at this point, I'll say this about the NL Central before we get too deep into the wild card. I feel like the Reds are done. I hate to say it because they were a really, really fun team early in the year. but they just don't have enough juice to get it going. I know they're technically still in the race, but if I were to just eliminate one that I don't have as much faith in, I think it's them. Their starters really, really sank them. Hunter Green came back and he was terrible, and then he went right back to the injured list. Their hitters have either gotten hurt or gotten cold. Matt McClain had like a 2-week stretch, man, where he was hitting like God himself. Just nothing but extra base hits. He had a crazy good series against the D-backs. Absolutely electric stuff from him. And then he got hurt. He's still hurt. He's out at least another couple weeks, I think. And Ellie De La Cruz has, you know, had been setting the world on fire when he got called up, and now he's a ground ball machine who can't stop striking out. He's still got all that talent, obviously, and occasionally he'll do something highlight reel, but not nearly on a consistent enough basis for them. Which, you know, they still got guys. Spencer Steer is still good. Jake Fraley's come out of nowhere, and their bullpen is still solid. But I just don't think it's enough to catch Miami and Chicago and Milwaukee. Chicago, I do really, really like, and they should be getting Marcus Stroman back soon, which is going to help them a lot. But at the end of the day, I think Milwaukee, if their offense keeps clicking like it's been clicking lately, they'll be fine. That's my biggest question mark with Milwaukee, is their hitting, as it always is. And thankfully, they haven't had to worry about that because Christian Yelich and William Contreras have enjoyed tremendous second halves. In addition to their supporting cast, Sal Frelick has been great, save for some strikeout troubles. Maybe Josh Donaldson will actually contribute for them instead of the Yankees. It honestly wouldn't surprise me. The Aaron Hicks of the National League. But I'm high on the Brewers. I kind of wanted to say the Cubs might usurp them at this point, but the Brewers, I think, are just getting hotter than the Cubs at the right time. So I'm going to say Milwaukee finishes them off.
Very fair. I think in the National League, the field that it is right now, Atlanta, LAD, Milwaukee, Philly, Chi-Town, and Arizona, it's probably going to end up being the final result. Because honestly, Miami's bats just honestly scare me. San Francisco's all right, but I just don't really feed off of their energy, to be honest. Like, for whatever, like, they're on a 3-game win streak at the moment, but I need to see something from San Fran to make me think this team is special. This team is a playoff team. I mean, to be honest, I can't picture it in my mind that this is going to be the results. Like, I can understand the division winners. Like, we were pretty close on picking them unanimously to begin the year. Actually, no, we weren't. I picked the Mets, but whatever. You could see that these division winners could realistically be division winners at the end of the year. And yeah, Philly, I can understand, but Chicago and Arizona were just completely, like, out of nowhere. And even Miami, San Fran, and Cincy's success is really just because of the spoiled victories that the other teams did not pick up on. So I think the field we've got right now, I can at least say I can see something a little bit special in each of these teams. So I think the standings kind of hold as they do. I really don't see much shuffling going on, especially given the Braves' dominance, the Dodgers being the Dodgers. Milwaukee will guarantee themselves the 3 seed. And then you've got Philly, Chicago, and Arizona fighting out for that 1-2-3. And honestly, I think if you're looking at which team is best to worst, it's 1-2-3 as it is right now. Philly, Chicago, and Arizona. I just think that's how it's going to shape out. And by the way, we're moving on to talking about the wild cards right now, not just the NL Central anymore, obviously. So at least in my book, that's the golden combination. If I did, again, have to pick a team that could potentially make that jump, I would say San Francisco, just because I think they're the most competent team between Miami and Cincinnati, as in this team, I think, has enough depth to get there. Again, they're not the most special team, but maybe if luck falls their way. But I like the field as it stands in its current seeding at this moment to be the way things play out in the National League.
It's funny you mentioned that, the whole if one team were to sub in, it would be the Giants, because my hot take for the NL wild card is the Diamondbacks may end up falling out. That would be, if I were to have a hot take about this, it's that. I'm fully confident in the Phillies. They're a great team. I honestly think they're a sneaky pick to make noise this year.
Yeah.
And the Cubs, if they keep up this momentum, they'll be fine. They won't go too far. I don't think they're ready, but they'll be fine. And frankly, credit to them for jumping on the mistakes and lost victories, as you put it, of teams like the Cardinals. They saw an opportunity and they took it. I commend them for it. But The way the Diamondbacks are playing right now does not indicate to me that they're due for any sort of regression. It's more so just I worry about San Fran catching a fire. Like you said, no one's really a superstar on that team. No one is going to like jump out at you and be like, oh my god, how is this guy not in the playoffs? You know, the bulk of their lineup is consist of a bunch of New York castoffs and Tyro Estrada, J.D. Davis, and Wilmer Flores. But to be fair, they're all hitting really, really well. Like, to the point where guys like Jock Peterson are bench guys. They're flex guys. There's Lamont Wade Jr. continuously anchoring the top of that lineup, and he's doing a good job, a better job than I thought he was doing. The starting rotation is not the best, but it could be a lot worse. You've got Logan Webb, who's still dealing as the ace. And then you got a bunch of openers and, depth pieces who have really done their job. That's what I like about San Francisco. Guys show up and they do their job. This isn't like, oh, we need to have the greatest, most impact-ready players at every single position in order to make a good baseball team. Like, you can make a good baseball team if you just get the right guys in the right places, you give them the right manager, which I want to shout that out. Remember, Gabe Kepler is managing this team, who is very, very good at what he does, especially ever since he took the job out in San Fran. He knows what he's doing. Everybody in San Francisco knows the goal, essentially. And I think if there's any team to make the jump, it's absolutely going to be them. Otherwise, I think the NL wild card stays pretty consistent. To avoid repeating what you said, my only hot take is that Arizona could fall out for San Fran. Now, jumping back over to the American League, I kind of wish we saved the National League for last because I really have nothing to add to the AL wild card outside of which one's not going to make it. That's really the only talking point you can make for the AL wild card, because I think you touched upon it earlier. Boston and New York are not making it. This is a pipe dream scenario if either of them even come close. If either of them, it's Boston, but their starting pitching is the baseball equivalent of putting your head in the washing machine and pressing start. That's what their starting pitching is. It's horrible. Don't even bother. I'm not even going to bother looking at their stats. They suck. So we got four teams to choose from. Well, let's say three teams to choose from, because Tampa Bay is not going anywhere. We have Toronto, Seattle, and Texas. One of them is going to be left at the wayside. I already expressed my want for Seattle to be the one to win the division, so I'm just going to eliminate them from my list of the teams that could actually go forward, and I'm going to eliminate them from my contention of teams that could fall out. So for me, it's either going to be Toronto or Texas. I think Houston could stay in there. Even if they lose the division to Seattle, I feel like they're not going to get beaten out by the wild card. Houston's too good for that. I hate to say that, but it's accurate. I almost want to be bold again and say Toronto falls out, but Tom, I'm going to be honest, they're low-key one of the hottest teams in the AL right now. I know they just lost. They just lost tonight for the first time, but I think they were on like a nice little winning streak there. They were 8-2 in their last 10. Their starting pitching is honestly coming into form, and they have the greatest hitter in baseball in Davis Schneider. That's important. So I hate to be boring, but I really think it's going to be Texas that's going to find their way out. Their pitching just scares me too much, and I'd be a hypocrite if I call Boston's starters bad without also acknowledging that Texas is taking a big step back too. I don't want that to be the case because they were an insanely fun team to start the year, and in a lot of ways they still are. But nevertheless, I feel like it has to be Texas that bows out for reason of pitching alone. Even though they did just make a clinic of the Blue Jays, the second a slightly worse pitcher gets in there, I start to worry. That's it.
Well, I would love the Blue Jays to fall just because I think it would be insanely hilarious for them to not make the postseason as well, given all the hype that they've had over the past few years and all that, and also because I put them to win the division, so just proof that my predictions are even worse than I always make them out to be. But, yeah, you're kind of right. They're 7-3 in their last 10. I could see them getting cold, but for the sake of I had three AL East teams in the playoffs already, I'm going to keep it that way. I'll say Toronto makes it as well. Which leaves us down to Seattle and Texas. And I mentioned earlier on in this episode, those two are going to be playing each other in two different series to round out the year. The loser of those, say it's 7 or 8 games, will end up not making the postseason. I think this is going to come down to the final, like, 4 games that they have. And I think by the second game of that series, we are going to see one of those teams be eliminated from playoff contention. And that team is going to be the Seattle Mariners. It's crazy to think it, and I swear I'm not just doing this to be different. But I thought they were all red hot and rosy and all that. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games. They're on a 3-game losing streak. Maybe this kind of short-term picture is fogging my memory forward, but it's also baseball. Anything can happen. For goodness sakes, the Red Sox still have a 1.6% chance to make the postseason. Miracles could happen. And ultimately, when I look at the rosters and I say, which one do I have more confidence in? When you're in the heavy-hitting American League, I think, quite literally, you need the better bats to prevail, even if your pitching is that much better. I think Texas's bats outweigh Seattle still, and that's why Seattle's kind of had this weakness all along over the past few years. It's kind of hampered them a little bit. Last year, not so much. This year, I think it will, ultimately, in that final stretch. And if they don't figure it out within the next, I'd say, week, their standings might have already been decided for them. I'm going to say Texas, even though their bullpen and their pitching is kind of reeling and they're missing Adolis Garcia, I just have enough confidence in those bats and the leadership there that they'll get it done. I hate to do this to Seattle, but I mean, I got to give it to Texas.
That's fair. Honestly, the Mariners are no strangers to this. We could probably devote an entire episode to the number of times they had a really good season, and then they came back like, wow, we're going to have a good season again. And then they immediately get out to a great start, but then the September is defined by losing out to the A's or the Rangers or, dare I say, the Angels. They've done this in the past. I like to believe this is going to be the trend-breaking year. I really want it to be because I like the Mariners. I think they're a very fun and enjoyable team. But like you said, those series between Texas and Seattle are going to be integral. That's basically going to be playoff baseball right there, because they're playing for their right to get in there. Barring a Toronto collapse, one of them can't make it. So that'll be fun to watch. Be sure to get a lookout for that. And with that prediction out there, that just about do it for a look at the pennant races, division races, playoff pictures for the time being. This time next week, we might get some further clarity as to how the division races are going to turn out, and probably the wild cards too. Nothing's going to be set in stone, at least too much yet. We're still relatively early in the month, but still, it's fun to see these races play out in real time. I frankly did not think some of these teams were in it as much as they were, especially over in the National League.
I mean, it's the most exciting time of the year, of course. And I already mentioned, like, those three wild cards in the National League are kind of like, what the f***s? Like, the Phillies, I can understand. But Chicago and Arizona, like, I was just kind of half-joking that the Cubs would almost be this good at the beginning of the year. That was just a bold prediction, just to be bold, to be that guy. Arizona, we both said, needed some time, and look at them. They still need some more time in the development cooker to really be that true, like, playoff threat, I think. But they're just there, again, based on proxy of three teams completely sucking, but also because they've played some damn good baseball periods of the year. They've also been extremely cold, like one of the coldest teams in baseball, too, so they've felt the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And in the AL, it's kind of that juggernaut that we expected. Like, it's the teams, maybe, except Texas, that could have competed. Baltimore looked really good to end the year last year. Houston, of course, is always a winner. Tampa, Toronto, Seattle, they're there too. Minnesota's just there because they're going to win the American League Central. And yeah, it's kind of, it's an exciting time of year. I would love it if my team was still in the hunt, but I can't ask for that every season. That's very unrealistic of me. So I'm just going to kind of enjoy the ride and root for the teams that are the most fun to root for, aka any team but the Houston Astros. So good for them. It's September baseball. It's going to be great. And that's, and the hijinks of September only makes October that much better, even if your team is not in it.
Couldn't have said it better. And I know millions of Yankee fans just plugged their ears and did not hear a word either of us just said.
No.
So yeah, now that being said, I couldn't agree with you more. It's going to be a fun pennant race. We're looking forward to talking about it more with you guys next time. But until then, and without a matching outro to the intro from Sarah McTomklin. Oh, that yeah. sounded so much funnier in my that sounded so much funnier in my head.
Yeah, I bet it
I'm
did.
I'm just gonna take this one myself. Thank you everyone so much for listening to episode 73 of the Diamond Duo podcast. Please again go follow us on social media at Diamond Duo Pod on Twitter and formerly X. Nope, that's backwards. X formerly Twitter. This is already off to a great outro, Tom. I could tell. The Diamond Duo Podcast on Instagram. Give us a follow for updates, show graphics, all that jazz. Show updates and graphics. Jesus Christ, I'm literally, this is the most backwards outro ever. Maybe the Sarah McTomklin thing did throw me for a loop.
This is a Tom Bauer crazier, type of outro, my man.
God damn it, I almost cussed in the outro. I'm not putting myself through that. Thank you again for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time. Take it easy.